Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Langston Colin Wilkins. He is the author of Welcome to Houston, Hip Hop Heritage, and Hustle Town. Langston is an assistant professor of folklore and African-American studies at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and most importantly, a native of Houston, Texas. And welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here and happy to chat.
Well, I will have to say, Langston, that I was really excited about the opportunity to interview you for two big reasons. One, I lived in Houston for 8 years, from 1984 to 1992, and I loved living in Houston. My two oldest daughters were actually born and raised in Houston. And then the second thing, I'm a huge fan of hip hop. So we had the intersection of those two high interests of mine. And so I have to tell you that when I think about hip hop, as I started to explore my relationship with hip hop, just really trying to think of, well, what was the very first song that sticks out in my mind? And it was Curtis Blow's song, The Break. And I believe that came out in 1979, 1980, when I was about 19 or 20 years old. And then I asked myself a second question, Langston, and I said, is there a seminal song that just sort of blew you away the first time I heard it on radio? And that was Black Steel and the Hour of Chaos by Public Enemy. And I heard it while I was living in Houston on the Rice University radio station. So before we start digging deep into Houston hip hop, I got to ask you, what is the first hip hop song that you can remember listening to? And is there a hip hop song that just sort of blew you away?
Oh, wow. Wow. That's a great question. The first hip hop song I can remember listening to, you know, it's funny, it's probably Public Enemy. You know, it's probably, 911 is a joke. It's probably like what really sticks out to me. I was around maybe 6 years old or so when it came out, and my dad was a big Public Enemy fan. And I just, yeah, I think that's the one I remember like really like connecting to when I was a young kid. And as far as, you know, hip hop songs that really just kind of blew me away, well, you know what? I'm gonna go back to my childhood again, and the Ghetto Boys, "The World Is a Ghetto." You know, when that came out, when I first heard it, it kind of radically changed my life and just my sense of culture. And it really talked about things that, even as a small kid, that I could really relate to and that I would see on a day to day basis. And so that's when I first, you know, realized that, like, you know, hip hop was my thing, right? And it commented on my culture. And so to this day, I still get kind of chills when that song comes on when I play it. So yeah, let's go with the Ghetto Boys, The World Is a Ghetto.
All I have to say, when I heard my Ghetto Boys song was my mind playing tricks on me. And of course, it's the commercial song, right? And it came out when I was living in Houston. And I think maybe there's a different experience because hip hop came to the forefront when I was 19, 20 years old. You grew up with hip hop. You were 6 years old, 5 years old. You're listening to it. Your dad is listening to it. My parents were playing Motown.
Sure. Right.
So what do you think about how someone who didn't grow up in a town where hip hop was being played locally driven, like I grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana, and hip hop wasn't happening. I mean, hip hop actually hadn't been invented. So the older generation, when we think of hip hop, our seminal experiences are often driven by hip hop artists from New York or Los Angeles because we didn't have that local sound. But you grew up in hip hop itself with that local sound. So how do you think that affects how you look at hip hop from both a local perspective and a national perspective?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great question. It's complicated because, you know, when I was coming up, I mostly listened to music from probably the East and West Coast. I had my Houston thing a little bit, but, you know, to this day, a lot of the music I listen to comes from the coast. But I do think, you know, hip hop being very local and Houston having a strong hip hop scene, you know, as early as the late 1980s. I mean, hip hop was sort of a lived experience for me, you know, even though I wasn't an MC or a DJ or nothing like that. You know, hip hop, sounded like it was not just the soundtrack of my life, right? But it really was intimately connected with my day-to-day life, and it commented on things that were really relevant to me, right? And so, there was no that cultural distance that you're kind of talking about. I didn't feel, because hip hop was very local, very real and very grounded in my day-to-day realities. And I think that's the magic of any local hip hop scene, being able to really comment on and reflect people's day-to-day lives. And I was blessed to have that with Houston hip hop.
So now we got to go to your introduction outside of the Ghetto Boys to Houston hip hop. And as you know, I lived in Houston from 84 to 92. So I saw the Ghetto Boys, I saw the rise of the Ghetto Boys, and that was more or less all I knew about Houston hip hop. And then a young man came to work for where I worked. He came in office. He grew up in Houston. And what was interesting about him, he was a young white man, is he loved country and he loved hip hop. And he introduced me to Swisher House. All he could talk about was Swisher House. I had never heard of Swisher House. And so I thought it was interesting, one, sort of this intersection between someone loving country, which was hard for me at that point in time to wrap my mind around, and someone loving the Houston-based hip hop.
That's interesting. That I feel like that intersection or those connections between country and Western and Houston hip hop, it's not uncommon. I have other friends and their family members who listen to both genres. I mean, they're Black folks, right? And they're listening to both genres, actually. And I think it's something about, the sound and feel and how it reflects, the general kind of Southeast Texas or Houston atmosphere. I think there's something there. But yeah, it's funny, Swisher House, when I was coming up on the south side of Houston, Swisher House was the thing in the north side, right? And so it took me a minute
No,
to
I'm going to
kind
have
of,
to interrupt you real quick because I'm throwing out Swisher House, assuming everybody knows who Swisher
Yeah, I
House
could,
is.
yeah, right,
We're
yeah, Swisher House.
assuming that everyone knows who Swisher House
Yeah, of
is.
course. I'm just diving. Yeah, no, Swisher House, incredibly impactful and important rap collective, label and crew, from the north side of Houston, founded by DJ Michael Watts and oh, I'm gonna forget, and OG Ron C, back in the 90s. And they featured artists like legendary artists like Slim Thug and Paul Wall and Chamillionaire and Mike Jones. All of those folks come from the Swisher House camp, and they were kind of the not rivals of another crew, the Screwed Up Clique, but they were kind of the north side, north side Black Houston's rap collective. Just as the Screwed Up Clique was represented the south side, the north side had Swisher House. And yeah, they've made incredible music across almost 30 years now. No, Swisher House really helped bring Houston hip hop to the mainstream in the mid 2000s. And really, when people think about Houston hip hop, they think about the Screwed sound, but they also think about all those Swisher House artists that made a, put Houston hip hop on the map after the Ghetto Boys. So yeah, incredibly important.
I'm going to have to ask what happened to Swisher House because I remember Mike Jones and I bought the Mike Jones album. I'm listening to Mike Jones. I'm listening to Paul Wall. And then it just seemed to kind of wasn't getting here, living in Austin, Texas, living in Austin, Texas area. So talk about developing and doing this music that's really Houston-centric. For a while, it blows up on a national basis. And then it just seems to sort of level off.
And I remember, 2004, 05 through 07, Houston was really in the mainstream, and it was mostly due to Swisher House, and Lil Flip was part of that too, I think. I think it was a time in hip hop in general where the national hip hop landscape was just kind of more open to these kind of unique hyper local sounds. So Houston kind of blew up then. Oakland, at the same time, kind of had their moment in the spotlight. And there was like another scene too. I can't remember which one. I think Atlanta was growing up too, right? And Atlanta's still kind of the center of hip hop. But I think, that window was just short for these hyper local scenes. I think, it was a time where hip hop audiences were trying to They were looking for something different, you know, something that wasn't Eastern and Western, and I think or Los Angeles and New York, let me say that. And I think these other sounds kind of gave them that. But then it just kind of ended. I think there was a general kind of disinvestment from or by, you know, these mainstream record labels. And Houston was always driven by, you know, this independent scene. So those artists just went back to Houston and continued to produce incredible records and make money, even though they weren't having the same kind of national or even regional impact as they were before. But, you know, Swisha House is still doing its thing. They're still going strong, just not having the, you know, commercial reach that they did maybe 15 years ago.
Well, one of the lessons I learned during COVID is how much musical artists really make their money by touring, that
Yes.
they're not making their money by selling records anymore. Matter of fact, the amount of money you make from streams is so minuscule.
It's nothing.
It's you know, when you think about it, for example, you know, you get your monthly fee to Spotify or Apple or Amazon Music, and you have access to all the music. Whereas when I was growing up, you bought an album, you
Oh, yeah.
spent $10 for an album for 8 songs, and that was it. You either listen to the radio station or you play the album. How do you think that's affected, you know, your local Houston area hip hop artists in terms of going from a hobby to a living?
Ooh. Yeah, it's affected it greatly, from a number of angles. One, back in the CD days, right? Artists in Houston could make a lot of money selling CDs, right? Because they were independently driven, they were independently produced, and they were distributed by local wholesalers, right? And these artists were like getting strong percentages of individual record sales. So if you sold, you know, 100,000 copies or even 50,000 copies regionally, right, you were making bank, you know. And so you were able to really like live off your music and live well back in the day. Now, you know, with streaming, where people, you know, can pay $10 a month and get access to whatever they want, however many times they want it, and you're getting what, less than a cent off every stream, or like maybe 0.001 cents off every stream. You're not able to like make money and support yourself off music alone. But also, you know, I think streaming has also given artists and audiences just more access to music. Period. And so, you know, when I was growing up, I had to go to the record store, and I'd be limited by what they had in store, right? And Houston has some great record stores, so I got a lot, but still limited. Now you can listen to whatever you want, and that directly impacts, I think, the sound of the music, right? And also what audiences want from the music. And so it just naturally changes the dynamics of the music even locally, because you have artists pulling from everywhere and also trying to meet the varied kind of diverse demands of local audiences. So streaming has done, yeah, a number on hip hop in all localities. Houston, though, you know, it's affected it, but Houston still holds tight to their, you know, screwed and chopped tradition. And that's kind of what I talk about in the book. But, you know, even that's changing to some extent nowadays.
So let's get into the screwed and chopped traditions there, because I think once again that's Houston centric. If you go to LA, the super very informed hip hop artists, of course, are very familiar with the you know screw music and chopped and all that sort of stuff. But the general population isn't. So talk a little bit. So let's pretend you're talking to an audience that really just wants to learn about what is this tradition that Houston developed that you thought was so important that you actually wrote a book about it.
So let's see where to start. So screwed and chopped, or let me just say screw music, right? Or screw is both a musical practice, and I use it to define the larger Houston hip hop tradition, which includes other cultural practices. So focused on the music, right? Screw music is slow. It's a slow, muddy, atmospheric hip hop sound, mostly production sound, right? And so whereas, you know, most hip hop production or beats are either mid tempo or up tempo, right? Screwed music is very, very slow, right? And it's down tempo. It's bass heavy, right? It's meant to be played through, souped up car stereo speakers, right? It's an experiential music. It was actually developed in the late 1980s by a local DJ named DJ Screw from Houston. That's where Screw gets his name from, who just kind of pioneered this style and began recruiting other local MCs to rap over his slowed beats. And out of that, they created this hyper local hip hop sound that still defines Houston to this day, right? But then you have the larger Screw tradition, which I think also includes the car culture called slab. And it's slabs are pictured on the cover of my book, but it's these old school cars that feature all kind of modifications, but especially they're known for these cone like chariot like rims called swingers or elbows, depending on who you talk to. And to some extent, and also depending on who you talk to, the Screw tradition also includes this kind of drug practice called lean or syrup. And it's essentially codeine based cough syrup mixed with some sort of flavor additive. And it was, a part of the Screw scene in the mid 2000s. You would constantly hear references to lean in the music and mixtapes. But now,
Didn't DJ Screw die from an overdose of that?
yeah, that's the story. And even beyond him, a lot of those artists were negatively impacted by their Screw, their lean usage. And then at some point, the syrup was banned and all that, and it's less part of the culture now. And I think more so, it's sort of used as iconography of the culture. So, the purple syrup, you see that color, that's like the unofficial color of Houston hip hop. It's purple. And Screw lean usage isn't talked about as much today. So, but the Screw, yeah, tradition, you got the Screw music, you have the slabs, and you have the lean, and that constitutes this hip hop heritage in Houston, Texas.
So you grew up in Houston. Both your parents from Houston, one from the north side, one from the south side. You grew up, I believe, in the Hiram Clark area.
I
Actually, I used to live
did.
off of South Post Oak Road where they had that
Oh
old
yeah.
rice, and I lived off of West Airport.
Oh
And
yeah. Oh yeah.
I know that area a little bit.
Yeah.
And sort of that's that working class black community, right? And some, a little upper middle. If you go further, I'll say to Fort Bend County, but that working class community. And but you left at 18
I did.
and you went to Austin, got your bachelor's degree, and then you went to Bloomington, Indiana. And so I do know this, when I interview authors who say grew up in another country and they come to the United States to go to college, they tell me when they go back to Jamaica or to Trinidad, they are no longer considered Jamaicans or Trinidadians. So you gone so long, but deciding to come back to Houston, write this book. Was there any trepidation on your part in terms of being accepted in the Houston hip hop community because you have been gone so long? Did it take you some time to sort of readjust yourself from how you saw the hip hop community in Houston based on growing up there and based on, of course, your visits home to visit family stuff versus what you saw when you engulfed yourself in it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, no, it yeah, on on the first, yeah, I did kind of certainly have concerns about my ability to really connect with and get into the culture down there. One, because yeah, I'd been gone for years and only really spent, summers in Houston. Well, and not even the whole summer, right? Over the course of 10 years or so. But also because, I mean, look, these hip hoppers, they're cool folks, right? I mean, they have their own, like really awesome, interesting lifestyle that I didn't really like fit into either. So, like, how would I kind of really connect in the intimate ways that I needed to connect to get their stories and to get access to the culture? So I had all those concerns and everything, but I quickly realized going back to Houston, and I lived back in my parents' house, when I was doing the field work, so I was down there in Hiram Clark, that the folks pretty quickly accepted me and were really hype about the project that I was doing. They were happy to see, I think, another black person covering the scene in some kind of way, and also trying to get their PhD while talking about, our culture down there. So, I was surprisingly pretty quickly accepted, and people welcomed me into their homes, into their vehicles. We went out to eat, got coffee. I mean, it was really like I felt at home very quickly. From even some of the hardest hardcore hip hoppers in Houston. And so that was awesome. And I think everyone just kind of understood what I was trying to do. And, we're also proud of, where I was trying to go and how I was trying to, help shine a light on their stories and their lifestyle. So I got nothing but I got a lot of access. I mean, of course, there were artists who was just hard to lock down, right? And, we would make schedule times to meet and interview, and they would kind of, forget it, right? That happened many times. And I understood these folks are busy, and I knew that was part of kind of the work I was doing. That happened many times. But no, I ended up with tons of interviews and experiences, and, people would just, want to join me and hang out with me as I was doing my research and attending the shows and stuff. So no, I made a lot of friends and built a lot of connections while down there pretty quickly.
So what do you think distinguishes the Houston hip hop scene as opposed to Atlanta? When I think of Atlanta, I think of T.I., I mm-hmm. think of Ludacris, I think of Jermaine Dupri.
Yep.
I don't really think a lot about New Orleans other than mm-hmm. Master P and yep. Lil Wayne. But when I think of Lil Wayne, I just think of Lil Wayne. I don't think of a sure. New Orleans hip hop scene. Well, Master P had a whole stable of artists
yeah.
based there in New Orleans. And honestly, when I think of Miami, all I think of is it Pitbull?
Pitbull's down there. Yeah.
Luke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Can't forget Luke.
Can't forget Luke. So we have all these regional hip hop scenes. What do you think makes Houston, in your mind, so special?
Oh, that's a great question, because, one thing I want to do with this book is not dismantle this idea of the Dirty South and this larger regional or Southern identity in hip hop, because it's there, but really draw attention to what makes each of these local scenes, very distinct and unique. I think, of course, the sound, right, of Houston hip hop is very different than these other Southern locales. If you're talking about New Orleans, you're talking about Atlanta, even especially Miami. These are up-tempo, dance-based kind of dance-driven sounds, right? But Houston, I mean, it's hard to, there's dances associated with the music, but it's so slow that it's just really not, driven by movement or body movement. It's really experiential, atmospheric music. You feel it in your mind, body, and soul, right? I mean, it's a total body experience when you're listening to it. And also, it's just the lyrics are so hyper local. And that's kind of what drew me into this project in general. It's just like, why is Houston hip hop filled with so many distinct local references that most people outside the city won't even understand, right? I mean, it's casually throw out, references to streets and people and events.
Give me
and
some
stuff,
of those
right?
streets. Throw out some of those references.
Oh, yeah, let's go. Yeah, I mean, I'll start with Hiram Clark. You know what I'm saying? That's one. We can go to South Park, right? Boulevard or MLK Boulevard. You can go to Spice Lane in the Southwest. What else?
About Third Ward?
Fifth Ward, yeah, all that. Yeah, Wheeler. Yeah. Homestead, Tidwell on the north side, everybody's representing, some street or some neighborhood.
But are they representing the food? I gotta ask you that. I'm sorry, I had to
interrupt food.
I'm a food guy. And I contend to all my friends in Texas that the best city for a wide variety of food by far is Houston, Texas.
I mean, that makes sense to me. I agree. And that makes sense considering the sheer diversity in the city where you have the kind of Louisiana, Cajun, Creole influence, which I love. But then you have the strong Mexican community and all that food. I mean, we have so many communities from the Asian diaspora and all that's there. So if you're looking just to do kind of a food tour, like a worldwide food tour, you can find that in Houston, and it's all good, and so, and I think if not the food, all that diversity too also is part of the Houston hip hop story and part of why, these artists can really just make music for the city and not really worry about everybody else's because they have so many different audiences here that they can pull from and connect to. And I think that's also what makes the scene kind of unique or distinct from others around the country is that incredible diversity and all of it seems like all the communities buy into this larger sense of Houstonness, and I think artists tap into that.
Are there any artists that you think we all should really know about? And I know you're gonna have, I'm asking, you're gonna have to pick. You can't,
Oh man,
you're gonna
see,
have to pick a couple of artists.
okay,
No shade on anybody else, as
yeah.
I heard on a sports debate yesterday when they said, when someone said, when I say Michael Jordan's the greatest, I'm not throwing shade on LeBron James.
Right. Both are great in their own aspects. I'm a Jordan guy, but yeah. Oh, see, okay. So, first of all, everybody I talk to in Houston, everybody I work with, I mean, I love what they do, and I pick these folks because I really connect with the music that they were making. So let me say that. But if I had to like pick maybe two, one is my guy from the north side of Houston, the mighty D. Risha, who has made incredibly interesting, unique sounding, but still culturally rooted music over the course of maybe 15 years or so. He's not as well known as some of the other artists out there in Houston, or and even some of the artists I wrote about in the book. But in terms of just sheer quality of music and dedication to hip hop and everything that hip hop is, but also trying to keep alive the Houston tradition. He is the one that I, really turn people towards. And he has actually a show coming up in December, kind of like a comeback show for him that people should go out and check. Outside of him, oh, it's hard. I'll go with, let me do three. I'll go with Rob Gillette,
Okay.
who is an artist from the southwest side of Houston. Kind of more hardcore in nature, kind of makes street-oriented music, but he's so lyrical and he's so smart with it. And everyone should check out this his projects because he has a sense of like vulnerability, right? That you don't really get from a lot of hip-hop artists. So you should check him out. And there's the aspiring me, who was only referenced once in the book, but he is the son of a Houston hip-hop legend named Big Mello, who's from the Harlem Clark. And he, the aspiring me, has sought to keep his father's like legacy alive through music, but also kind of chart his own unique path in the music. So what you end up with is this really, really interesting music that's rooted in both family history and cultural legacy. So check those three artists out, but check them all out really. But yeah, those three in particular.
Does Houston claim UGK even though they're from Port Arthur?
No,
Because isn't Mun B have a restaurant in Houston?
Yeah, you
And
got Trill Burgers now. No, it's funny because I'm a huge, huge UGK fan. I was just watching a bunch of Pimp C interviews last night. I make my wife watch them too.
so once
Yeah, we
again
do
for
claim.
yeah,
Oh,
so UGK.
UGK. Yeah, UGK stands for Underground Kings. They are a rap duo from Port Arthur, Texas, which is a town maybe 90 miles south of Texas. Or 90 minutes south of Texas. They consist of rappers Bun B and the late producer rapper Pimp C. They've made just incredible music across 30 plus years. If you need to check out a UGK project, go get Riding Dirty because you really that album contains some of the finest Houston Southern or hip hop period ever produced. Houston claims them. They're screwed up click affiliates, and they are certainly influential in the Houston scene and the Southern hip hop thing in general. So super, super important group.
So it's escaping my memory, but there's a song I like by them that I really love, and they actually pulled that famous Atlanta rap duo group sh who I should know was part of that song.
Oh, and are you talking about International Players Anthem by
Yes.
Outkast? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
That
yeah.
is that was my introduction to UGK.
Oh yeah, and that's a good one. That was a good one. Yeah, no, that was yeah, from their comeback album, just simply called Underground Kings. Yeah. And that was song was also produced by 3-6 Mafia from Memphis. So you get like, kind of the scope of Southern hip hop too. I love that song, and all four verses of it. Incredible record. Yeah.
So when you were writing this book, I know that there's probably so much material you had, like way more material than you could put into the book. Was there anything that, I don't want to say regret, because you have to edit. Editors always want you to say, okay, we got to cut this down, we got to cut this back. Is there anything in particular you want to mention that you said, I had to leave this out of the book, I just didn't have the space? And if you were doing an extended version, Stephen King, he wrote this novel years ago that was like published at 700 pages. Then he re-released the original, which was like 1,000 pages. The
Wow.
Stand, that was The Stand.
Oh, Stan. Okay.
Yeah. So what would you have in that you didn't, was not able to keep in there, that you think would just really bring a greater understanding of the hip hop scene in Houston?
Oh, let's see. Let's see. Yeah, a
And
few
for the
things.
audience's benefit, he did not have any idea I was going to ask this
Yeah, I
question.
know. I gotta dig through. Because this project started as my doctoral dissertation, and then I transformed it into a book. So there's things in the dissertation that are not in the book. Some of that stuff, a lot of theory and stuff, I was glad to take out, and because no one cares about that. But if I think about anything that I did take out or that just didn't have space to fit in, I think some of the history, right, of the Houston hip hop scene, which has been done in other books, yeah. But I have my own particular kind of spin on it, and I think it would have brought greater grounding to the larger meaning of Houston hip hop in general. I had to take some of that out. I took out a lot of kind of personal story and personal connection too, just because of space and time constraints. And also, and this is something this is not something I took out, but something I wish I would have done more. We don't have a lot of women, right, represented in the text, and part of that's because at the time I was doing the research, there were a few, right, female rappers that I was able to connect with, but it was just hard to, they weren't really present, right, in the spaces I was entering in. And then it was hard to really connect with them because obviously, and rightfully so, they were kind of protective, right, of their time and their
You mean they kind
space.
of blew up?
Yeah,
Yeah, a couple of them
well,
just like really
a
blew
couple of them
up.
blew up. Yeah, oh yes, now Meg Thee Stallion and all of them, yeah, super big. But even but back then too is I think because of the Houston hip hop scene was so male dominated and hyper masculine in ways, right? These women felt the need to just protect themselves and protect their bodies and weren't as open to me showing up at their house, right, to interview them as some of the male rappers were. And I think my study, I wish I had more female voices represented than I did. And so yeah, but I think what I ended up with is a good representation of what the scene has been like over 10 years, right before up until this point where I think things have changed, and now you have Meg Thee Stallion as the most popular rapper from Houston, Texas, and you just have more women and diversity in the scene. I think I would have included more about the Houston Slab Parade, which I talked about in the conclusion, because I thought that was just a cool story about how the city and the rap scene came together to produce this large event. But that's it. Otherwise, I think, yeah, I was able to conclude a lot of the stuff I wanted to, and I told a good story, I think.
Well, when you were coming up with terms in the book, I had never heard of like slabs. I had never heard of slabs. And I was in San Francisco in May, and I was on the wharf doing a tour scene, and there was a collection of cars. Oh, yeah, there was a collection of cars, pimped out cars. And so when I thought about what you wrote about in the book, I said, wait a minute, I think I experienced that in San Francisco.
No, all of those urban car culture, slab, then you have like Donks and Bubbles in Southeast, and then over California has its own like unique traditions too. All of that at least for African Americans, go back to, you know, kind of pimp culture, right? And the car, the modified cars that they would use as they would go out and do their thing. And so you see kind of the legacy of those traditions, you know, in San Francisco, you know, obviously in LA, in Texas, Memphis, you know, and all these other kind of really urban areas. And so, yeah, they all have like a unique ancestor, but kind of, they kind of tweak the tradition based on their own local experiences and culture, for sure.
Do we have that Houston album similar to, I had never heard of Compton until the album Straight Outta Compton, right? And then right, all of a right. sudden you're brought into that particular atmosphere. And I think what makes songs like that, or songs like, say, Black Steel and the Hour of Chaos, yeah. is there is sort of this broad understanding of the challenges, or, you know, being a conscientious objector to going to the military mm-hmm. and how we're right. treated in prison and all those things, mm-hmm. and Black Steel and the Hour of Chaos and Straight Outta Compton, which is just an anthem for
yeah.
where this very tough part of LA. So is there an album from Houston artists that sort of not represent just their micro neighborhood, but mm-hmm. sort of broadly represent?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good one. You know, that's a hard one, actually. If I'm gonna pick anything, I'm gonna go with a Scarface album because I think he's the greatest Houston hip hop artist, and obviously one of the greatest hip hoppers of all time. You
member
know,
of Ghetto Boys.
Member of the Ghetto Boys. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, member of the
Ran
Ghetto
for
Boys.
Ran for City Council, yeah. right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Ran for Houston City Council.
He did. I'm gonna go with Scarface's "The Diary," and you know, I think which came out in 1994 on Rap-A-Lot Records. You know, while the sound isn't necessarily rooted in the screwed and chopped tradition, right? I do think it gives you a great peek into kind of Houston's Black working class or street life, and similar in the same way that kind of something like Straight Outta Compton did for Compton is a very unique sound on its own. And Scarface, being the elite MC that he is, he really takes you into the psychological depths of, you know, living in these communities and working in the street. And it's just an incredibly rich album. And he kind of paints a dynamic portrait of these, of Houston in general. Right. And so I would turn anyone towards that record. Yeah. Let's go with that one though. I mean, it's hard to pick because there's so many incredible albums that came out of this city, but that's just one of my favorite ones. So go listen to that.
All right, so I dug back in my memory when you talked mm-hmm. about the car culture, so I'm about mm-hmm. to test your music. This is music trivia test. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna quote a line from a song from my day, mm-hmm. and it has to do with the car culture from them. Mm-hmm. Diamond in the back, sun rooftop, digging yeah. the scene with the gangster lane. You know what
yeah.
I'm talking about?
And I wrote about it. Yeah, be thankful. Yeah, yeah, be thankful. Yeah, yeah.
For what you got. But that scene, because when I listened to that song, I was, I don't know, in my late teens or something. You're yeah. thinking about the guys growing up with the diamond in the back, some, yeah. you know, having that gangster lean when you're mm-hmm. driving your Cadillac. They can't see me, but I'm leaning back. You know, you're doing that lean back, and that right. car represents a certain attitude and a certain representation of who you think you are.
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. And, you know, that song popular in the slab and kind of
it's
urban
popular
car
in
culture.
The slab?
Yeah, it's popular. Yeah, in urban car culture communities around the country, really, even if not slab. But it's because I think it represents what I was talking about, like that early 70s car culture. Right. And also, you know, it's an interesting song because I think a lot of people associated with kind of the street or pimp culture, but it was a critique on that culture, right? And so yeah, like incredibly awesome song, and it kind of helped at least sonically inspired later connection between music and car culture that we see in hip-hop today.
Well, Lisa, how often do you think people don't get the critique and accept the words straight up, and it affects how they look at life, right?
Yeah. What are you saying?
So when someone hears a song, the writer is critiquing that culture, but someone just hears
yeah.
the straight don't see the subtlety or the nuance and just says, hey, I want to be like that.
No, super, super common, especially if we're talking about, hip hop and the harder street oriented or gangster rap, right? I mean, when I was growing up, it was mostly West Coast gangster rap that I was listening to, and also Southern gangster rap. And, it was rare that I, even as a kid, felt like these artists were glorifying the culture. In fact, I mean, if you listen to their stories, they would tell you that these lifestyles would only get you either dead or in jail, And so I took them as, kind of comments, right? Or reflections on that lifestyle and kind of cautionary tales warning a lot of us against those lifestyles. But a lot of folks who weren't as oriented to the music and in these traditions, you just kind of saw it as people glorifying street culture, and that's just not how it was for most of those artists. So no, I think you're right about that.
You know, when I hear, the critique of gangster culture or gangster rap, and I listen to a lot of different music, gangster rap, conscious rap, different types of music. And then I hear, the staring critique of how this is killing our community. And I'm looking, I said, we got much violence portrayed on TV, in movies, The Godfather. I mean, we could just go on and on and on. And I don't hear, maybe I'm missing that, but I don't hear the same level of critique about these movies that display. And I would argue watching a movie where you get both, the video for an hour and the audio would have a greater impact than, the song. I would always say, do you think maybe the, so I would ask you this, you're a sociologist, right?
Of sorts,
Of sorts, sort of cultural heritage. I mean, I think that, do you think this music in and of itself is going to have that kind of impact, or does it just work in if someone's already there?
I great question. I don't think on its own, in and of itself, it has that kind of impact. I mean, look, I can take myself for example. I mean, look, from t since I was 12 years old, I've been listening to the hardest of hardcore hip hop music. I mean, from NWA to UGK to Ghetto Boys to whatever. And never once did I think about going to do a drive-by or robbery or selling dope or nothing like that. That just wasn't what I was oriented towards, right? I went to college, I went to grad school, et cetera, right? That was my trajectory. And there's so many people out there like me. I think, the violence that people are trying to understand and figure out in our communities has nothing to do with music, right? I mean, there's many different sociological factors that contribute to the state of or a part of the state of these communities, right? But what I think the music did was kind of, for a lot of people, fulfilled that basic need to feel like you belong to a larger community, and you the need to feel affirmed. And even those folks in the street, they wanted to feel like they're not alone, and if you're poor and black in these neighborhoods, you want to feel like there's people out there who understand your plight and could, talk about it in ways and share it outward, right? And I think that's just what it did. So some of the content that we critique, right, is merely a reflection of what's going on in those communities, and also a way for these artists, as voices from those communities, to protest and let people know what was going on, right? And so, yeah, I the music didn't cause nor contribute to these issues. It just merely shined a light on it, and it allowed those folks in those environments to feel like somebody was thinking about them and somebody was telling their stories. That's how I see it.
Well, I'm going to go to the lighter side here. I want to know if any of the rap artists that you interviewed and listened to the music, are there a lot of references to the Galleria, to Westheimer, to West University, to Bel Air, which, for the benefit of our audience, or the is high-end Houston?
Not as much. I think you do get some Westheimer, because Westheimer is a long, long street, and it goes towards the hood too. And the Galleria does get mentioned quite a bit, because that's I think, yeah, it's still true. The primary shopping area for so many folks in Houston, and has a lot of the, fashion's a big thing in hip hop culture too, and so that's a spot where a lot of people can go and get their threads. But no, not a lot of references to West University and River Oaks and places like that outside of saying, hey, we don't feel like we belong there, right? And so I think the lack of references towards those areas kind of reveals the deep segregation that's also part of Houston in general, right? So we have all this diversity, but we also have incredible segregation, and we have pockets of blackness and pockets of Latino or Mexican culture. But it's often segregated from, mainstream white culture in the city. And so I think that also revealed itself in the Houston hip hop.
Last question. I'm traveling to Houston and I want to get immersed in the hip hop music scene in Houston. Where do I go?
Ooh, let's see. First, I'll give you two places. First, go to the Screwed Up Records and Tapes, which was the actually second location of the store that DJ Screw founded back in the 1990s. It's on West Fuquay, I think it's West Fuquay in Hyam Clark, so where I grew up. So just go there, right? Just stand there in the shop. Because there's going to be people who are deeply connected to the Screw movement and Houston hip hop just circling and socializing in the space. And if you want to like really feel the culture, right, I would go there. But also, let's see. Oh man, I would hit up. See now, let me. I don't know if that store is still there, but let's go with let's go with Screwed Up Records and Tapes, because I feel like that's where the tradition is the most concentrated, right? And if you're really trying to get a feel of, what makes Houston hip hop unique, go buy a CD from that store. Go, chop it up with the folks who are running it, because that's how you could really get inculcated to what this thing is. And people from all of the world travel to that store just to get a sense of what this Houston hip hop thing is. So I would just put that there. That's where you would go.
And if you want to listen to some live hip hop music from Houston hip hop artists, where do you go?
Oh, that's a good question. At this point, I'm not sure because a lot of the clubs got closed down. But I would. That's a good question that I don't know if I can answer, because I think COVID did a number on a lot of the clubs that I was familiar with. So I'd have to like do research about what's still open and what's still open to hip hop culture in the city, because even things are changing there. I would tell you to go to the Screw Shop, but also hit up the local radio station 97.9 The Box, because they're still an important space for hip hop nationally, right? But also locally. Also, and this is you can do this from anywhere, right? Read my book, but also check out the Donnie Houston podcast. Donnie Houston's a guy who a journalist who created his own video platform that features oral history with local or Houston hip hop artist. He's a guy I went to middle school with, so I've known him for a long time. But he's one of the chief, I think, historians of the scene. And he is just a treasure trove of knowledge and connections. And if you want to hear live hip hop, just follow him on Instagram and see where he's DJing, because he's the one who really is holding up the legacy of this scene, through music. So that's what I would tell you to do if you're trying to learn about the scene from a musical standpoint.
Well, Langston, it's been great getting this nostalgic view from my perspective of hip hop in Houston, Public Enemy, the Ghetto Boys, the Screwed Up Clique, all those different things that I think is important to recognize hip hop as a cultural heritage. I mean, it survived and actually prospered. And the last thing I'll say is when I listen to the music, like when I was listening again this morning to Black Steel, The Hour of Chaos, and I was thinking about how that electric piano just caught my attention, and just listening to those lyrics, and I look at it as just an incredible cultural contribution to American society.
No, that's one of my favorite songs of all time too. I mean, I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened it, read it, said they were suckers. I mean, I got the whole thing memorized. And yeah, that bang of the piano with that Isaac Hayes sample, I think. Yeah,
Yes.
no, incredible song and one of the greatest hip hop songs of all time. I had to do an oratory in middle school and I recited that song in class. So yeah, incredible record.
Langston Colin Wilkins, author of Welcome to Houston, Hip Hop Heritage and Hustle Town. This has been great talking to you about hip hop.
This has been fun. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.